The meeting in Osaka is the first opportunity for the two leaders to discuss their disputes face to face.
China and the United States look to restart trade talks. It's Wednesday, June 26th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, Australia rescues children of Islamic State. Myanmar military perhaps hiding behind the internet. Less trade is building more anxiety. A growing aquatic dead zone, a new way to fight malaria. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China hopes an upcoming meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping will help build trust and de-escalate the trade war between the world's two largest economies. The two leaders are scheduled to meet later this week at the Group of 20 summit in Osaka, Japan, as we hear more from Charles de Ledesma.
Experts hope the planned encounter at the G20 summit in Japan will help lower the temperature in the trade war between the world's two largest economies. The meeting in Osaka is the first opportunity for the two leaders to discuss their disputes face to face since Donald Trump said he was ready to target the $300 billion in Chinese imports that he hasn't already hit with tariffs, extending them to everything China ships to the US. A foreign ministry spokesman says China remains committed to working with the US to develop China-US relations based on coordination and cooperation. I'm Charles Ledesma.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Geng Shuang told reporters Tuesday in Beijing the meeting will hopefully promote mutual trust and resolve some of the outstanding issues we're facing now. During a phone call Monday between Chinese Vice Premier Liu He and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, they exchanged opinions on trade and agreed to maintain communications, according to China's Commerce Ministry. China's state-owned Xinhua News Agency said the phone call was requested by U.S. officials. A senior U.S. official said Monday the meeting will provide Trump the chance to get China's position on the escalating trade war. The official added that Trump would be comfortable with any outcome of the meeting. Trump has already imposed 25% tariffs on $250 billion in Chinese imports and says he is prepared to go much farther, with another $300 billion of tariffs on Chinese imports. China has retaliated with tariffs on U.S. goods. 11 rounds of previous talks have failed to ease U.S. concerns over China's massive trade surplus and China's acquisition of U.S. technology. Meanwhile, the United States has condemned efforts by China at the UN Human Rights Council to justify its incarceration of a reported million Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities in re-education camps in Xinjiang province. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA at the council session in Geneva.
After introducing himself as an ethnic Uyghur, the vice governor of Xinjiang province in China painted an idyllic picture of life there. Erkan Tuniyazi told diplomats at the UN Human Rights Council that 25 million people, encompassing many ethnic groups and religions, lived in solidarity, harmony, and mutual assistance. He said people in Xinjiang are united as closely as the seeds of a pomegranate. He said China had lifted 2.3 million people out of poverty in the province. He said religious beliefs were protected by law, and ethnic minority languages were taught in schools and widely used in social and public forums. Despite the progress, he noted China was confronted by many challenges from ethnic separatism, terrorism, and religious extremism. He said that has led to thousands of terrorist attacks, many deaths, and immeasurable property damage. In the face of those threats, he said China has been forced to crack down on violent and terrorist crimes and take preventive measures. He spoke through an interpreter.
By setting up vocational education and training centers in accordance with the law, we aim to educate and save those who are influenced by religious extremism and committed minor legal offenses. The centers provide courses on the country's common language, legal knowledge and vocational skills, and integrate de-radicalization throughout the entire education and training process.
The United States called China's vice governor's remarks an embarrassment to the council. A statement issued by the U.S. mission here in Geneva accused the council of once again granting a representative of one of the world's worst human rights abusers a platform for propaganda. The U.S. expressed alarm at China's highly repressive campaign against the Uyghurs and other ethnic groups in Xinjiang. It accused the Chinese government of subjecting more than 1 million people in so-called re-education camps to torture, pervasive high-tech surveillance, and measures to efface their cultural and religious identities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit our website, voanews.com. China hopes Trump-Xi meeting will help ease escalating trade war. Trump to hold at least 8 bilateral side meetings at G20. Australia rescues children of dead Islamic State fighters. The United Nations says internet blackout in western Myanmar may be hiding human rights abuses. UN Women releases report on equity families. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australia has rescued the children and grandchildren of 2 dead Islamic State fighters from a Syrian refugee camp. The Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, said they could not be held responsible for the crimes of their parents. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
For the 3 surviving children of the notorious Australian militant Khaled Sharouf, the nightmare of Syria is over. They're now reported to be in Iraq and will be resettled in Australia within weeks. They're said to be traumatized and in poor health. One has bullet wounds to her legs, while another, who's still a teenager, is expecting her 3rd child. She was forced by her father to marry a jihadist when she was 13. Sharouf took his family from Sydney to the Middle East in 2014. He made headlines around the world when he posed for a photograph in the city of Raqqa with his young son, who was holding a severed head. It's thought Sharouf was killed in an airstrike 2 years ago. He'd previously been jailed in Australia for terrorism offences and released in 2009. His Australian wife, Tara Nettleton, a convert to Islam, reportedly died of medical complications in Syria in 2015. The Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, says the couple's children deserve a fresh start.
I mean, the fact that you would take a child and put them in a conflict zone like this is despicable, and I find it disgusting. But the children can't be held responsible for that.
The children aged between 2 and 18 were removed from a camp in northern Syria by an aid agency working with Australia. The group includes 3 orphans of another Australian militant, Yasin Rizvik. The rescue mission was the first of its kind by a Western government. Concerns over security in Syria have so far deterred other countries, including Britain, Germany and the United States. A lawyer representing Khaled Sharouf's children said that some Australians wouldn't welcome them home because of their family ties to extremism. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In Cambodia, 7 people have been charged in the fatal collapse of a building hours after the 3-day rescue operation to find survivors ended Monday. 28 people died, at least 26 were seriously injured when the building collapsed early Saturday, burying workers who lived on the worksite. Given the breakneck pace of Chinese-funded development on this once slow-moving coastal city that has become a boomtown filled with glitzy casinos catering to Chinese tourists, a building collapse seemed inevitable given lax permitting and more than a whiff of corruption, according to officials. In August 2018, the World Bank Group warned that development operated on build-first, license-later timelines, adding the granting of permits and control of construction is beyond the authority of individual provincial departments and municipality. Among those charged over the collapse were the building owner Chen Kun and construction supervisor Deng Xinghui, both charged with involuntary manslaughter, causing unintentional injuries and damage. Three other Chinese nationals, a Vietnamese and a Cambodian, were charged with conspiracy related to the charges, according to court documents. The Chinese embassy expressed its deepest condolences to the victims in a statement that added its support for a thorough investigation of the accident and necessary measures by competent Cambodian authorities in accordance with law. Sun Che, the executive director of the Affiliated Network for Social Accountability Cambodia, an anti-corruption advocacy group, said much of the construction in Cambodia was unregulated. He called for a thorough investigation of the collapse. Cambodia's Prime Minister Hun Sen visited the scene Monday and vowed to find the cause of the collapse and whether the building was legal or not. Authorities said the building was about 80% completed. Yun Min, the provincial governor, said two warnings had been issued to the construction company owner, but work had not stopped. VOA Cambodian reporter Chen Por An contributed to this report. Happening now in Asia, the family of a Chinese student murdered in the United States is urging a judge to sentence her killer to death. A federal jury in the state of Illinois Monday convicted a former University of Illinois student of killing a visiting Chinese scholar in 2017. Her body has not been found. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The United Nations Special Human Rights Investigator from Myanmar says the military may be carrying out gross human rights violations in western Myanmar under the cover of an internet blackout. Younghee Lee issued a statement Monday to the UN Human Rights Council that mobile internet service has been blacked out in 9 townships across Rakhine and neighboring Chin states, where the military has been battling fighters with the rebel Arakan army since late last year. Lee said she heard the military was conducting clearance operations in the region, which could be cover for committing gross human rights violations against the civilian population. In her statement, Lee wrote, "I fear for all civilians there." Telecommunications operator Telnor Group said it was ordered to shut down mobile service in western Myanmar by the Ministry of Transport and Communications because the internet was being used to coordinate illegal activities. More than 35,000 people have been displaced in fighting between the military and the Arakan Army, a group made up of ethnic Rakhine Buddhists seeking greater autonomy for the state. The United Nations has accused Myanmar's military of carrying out numerous atrocities against Rakhine State's ethnic Rohingya Muslims with genocidal intent in August 2017. More than 700,000 Rohingyas fled across the border to Bangladesh to escape a scorched-earth campaign launched in response to attacks on security posts by Rohingya insurgents. The atrocities, revealed in interviews with hundreds of displaced Rohingyas, include gang rapes, extrajudicial killings, and the torching of entire villages. Coming up, vocal opposition grows against trade tariffs. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. China hopes an upcoming meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping will help build trust and de-escalate the trade war between the world's two largest economies. The two leaders are scheduled to meet later this week at the Group of 20 summit in Osaka, Japan. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for much more on this and other stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the ongoing trade war between the United States and China and the specter of more tariffs are beginning to weigh heavily on businesses and those who move goods through ports of entry. We hear more from Skylar Ogden in today's VOA Asia Business Scene.
Leaders of major U.S. ports have added their voices to the criticism of U.S. President Donald Trump's ongoing trade dispute with China. In a letter to U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, the Port of Oakland's Executive Director Chris Lytle said the trade war poses a major long-term threat to the U.S. economy. He also said China accounts for a total of 37% of Oakland's trade volume. Lytle is among more than 600 U.S. business leaders that have asked the president to stop the trade dispute. Calls for an end to the tit-for-tat have come as President Trump considers an escalation of tariffs to 25% on $300 billion worth of Chinese imports. Port leaders in Seattle, Tacoma, Los Angeles, Long Beach, and other U.S. cities have also expressed opposition to the tariffs on Chinese imports, saying that they will only cause economic losses to American employers, workers, and consumers. The voices of opposition came as the U.S. Trade Representative's office held a series of public hearings from June 17th to the 25th, soliciting public comments and reaction to the additional proposed tariffs. A new study says that U.S. consumers will bear the burden of the potential 25% tariff hike on Chinese imports. The study, commissioned by the National Retail Federation, says that while U.S. apparel manufacturers would see revenues grow by about $620 million, each new dollar of revenue would cost consumers more than $7 in out-of-pocket expenses. In aggregate, that would mean $4.4 billion more each year for apparel, $2.5 billion more for footwear, $4.6 billion more for furniture, and $1.6 billion more for household appliances. The study says the toy industry would also be affected, as 88% of toys in the United States come from China. The report estimated that U.S. prices for toys would rise by 17%. President Trump and China's President Xi are scheduled to meet at the G20 summit in Japan this week, where they are expected to restart trade negotiations. Trump has already imposed 25% tariffs on $250 billion in Chinese imports, and China has retaliated with tariffs on U.S. goods. Many are hoping an agreement can be reached before Trump targets another $300 billion worth of Chinese imports with additional tariffs. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. At least four Chinese nationals have been charged in connection with a building collapse in Cambodia that killed 28 construction workers last Saturday. The unfinished seven-story condominium project doubled as temporary housing for at least 50 to 60 workers. At least 26 workers were injured in the disaster. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. scientists are predicting an area in the Gulf of Mexico, known as the Dead Zone, to grow to a near record size in coming months. The area, where there is low or no oxygen, is expected to increase to nearly 20,300 square kilometers. The Dead Zone is believed to be caused by nutrient pollution from human activity, and it can kill fish and other marine life. That is especially worrying to watermen who make a living while they fish in the Gulf of Mexico. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from the coastal city of Port Arthur.
Earning a living isn't work for Tuan Tran, it's an adventure.
I always had a passion for shrimping. I always loved the Gulf. Some reason, when I do this, I feel like I belong there.
Tran's family fished in Vietnam before they made their way to Port Arthur, Texas, after the fall of Saigon. Tran's been shrimping since he was a kid, and he says predictions that the Dead Zone in the Gulf of Mexico will grow to a near record size is troubling.
Not good. It's not good.
The Dead Zone is an area of ocean where there is little to no oxygen. The phenomenon threatens marine life, including oysters that can't move out of the zone, and shrimp as they move to areas with oxygen. With such a bleak forecast, Tran relies on his faith to stay hopeful.
We can only do so much and ask for his blessing. He'll take care of the rest. If I get worried just like Trey over JBS is saying, I won't have no sleep.
Trey Pearson over at JBS Packing runs a shrimp processing business in Port Arthur.
Very, very concerned as to what it'll actually do and how bad it really will be. We understand it's going to be real large this year.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration predicts the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico to span nearly 20,300 square kilometers, not far from the record set in 2017. Scientists say nutrient pollution runoff from farms is the main problem. Severe flooding in the Midwest sent runoff from farms south down the Mississippi River and into the Gulf of Mexico.
That water comes out and it stimulates an algae to grow. Sunlight comes in, algae will get that sunlight, it will start growing, producing a lot of biomass, and then the algae does what algae will do. It lives and it dies, and then it sinks to the bottom.
The bacteria that eats up the dead algae breathes in oxygen and breathes out carbon dioxide. Once that oxygen in the salt water is depleted, the layer of fresh water on top doesn't allow oxygen from the atmosphere to come through into the salt water, causing the dead zone. That affects not only the level of oxygen in the salt water, but also the marine life in the area, including shrimp.
If they can move, well, they're going to move to other places, and maybe they're not so favorable places either.
It makes it a lot more difficult to transit the product. It changes the areas that the boats would normally fish in.
For now, Pearson and Tran can only wait to see just how bad the dead zone will be. Tran says God will provide.
He always seemed to always carry us through the hard time.
And he says he will weather whatever comes his way in the months ahead. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Port Arthur, Texas.
The World Health Organization says nearly half of the world's population, including in Asia, is at risk of contracting malaria. Efforts to fight the disease take two paths, fighting the disease itself and fighting the mosquitoes that carry the disease. VOA's Kevin Enix has learned the University of Maryland researchers are testing a novel way to kill mosquitoes in Burkina Faso.
According to the Severe Malaria Observatory, the mosquito-borne disease is the leading cause of child mortality in the African nation of Burkina Faso. It's a loss no parent should have to suffer.
Losing a child was really painful for me, or for any parent for that matter. So if we can find a solution against this disease which killed my child, other people we will thank God. They should do everything to eradicate this disease. They should help us. We have hope and we are happy with how far the project has gone.
More than half of the world's population is at risk of contracting the disease, but it's a unique problem in Africa. And that's where University of Maryland researchers are testing a fungus that kills mosquitoes on contact.
I have nice blood, right?
We took a gene from a spider, and we put that spider gene, which encodes an insect-selective toxin, we put that gene into the fungus under the control of a promoter, and the promoter is the on-off switch of a gene. So under the control of this promoter, which only turns on in insect blood.
The fungus works quickly and effectively on malaria-carrying mosquitoes the moment it comes in contact with the insects.
Out of the box, if they land anywhere on the outside of a mosquito, they'll recognize that they're on a mosquito and they'll burrow their way into the mosquito.
In tests, once the fungus was introduced into a mosquito population, the mosquitoes were gone in a month. But success in the lab doesn't mean success in the field. So the team is testing their mosquito-killing fungus in Burkina Faso with the help of researchers there. Using raw meat, the team attracts mosquitoes into these test rooms. Once inside, they rest on a black cloth that has been treated with the fungus. The results are swift.
Well, basically, within two generations, we've killed 99% of the mosquitoes. So we caused the mosquito population to collapse.
The researchers say that the dramatic results of their test and using their treatment along with insecticides could have a big impact on fighting malaria and also could be adapted to fight other diseases like Zika or dengue.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download us as a podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Of course, you'll find us at our website, voanews.com. And each and every day, we stream our program at VOA Asia Facebook. You can hear us on great radio stations throughout Asia, like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. And of course, we thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Cedric Franklin, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.